Chapter 60. Flourished it about, with the hooked end downwards, except when he raised it for a few seconds, and throwing himself into a fencing attitude, made a pass or two at the sight scenes, or at any other object, animate or inanimate, that chanced to afford him a pretty good mark at the moment. "Well, Tommy," said this gentleman, making a thrust at his friend, who parried it dexterously with his slipper, "what's the news?" "A new appearance, that's all," replied Mr. Fowler, looking at Nicholas. "Do the honors, Tommy, do the honors," said the other gentleman, tapping him reproachfully on the crown of the hat with his stick. "This is Mr. Lenville, who does our first tragedy, Mr. Johnson," said the pantomimist. "Except when old Bricks and Mortar takes it into his head to do it himself, you should add, Tommy," remarked Mr. Lenville. "You know who Bricks and Mortar is, I suppose, sir?"
"I do not, indeed," replied Nicholas.
"We call Crummles that, because his style of acting is rather in the heavy and ponderous way," said Mr. Lenville. "I mustn't be cracking jokes though, for I've got a part of 12 lengths here, which I must be up in tomorrow night, and I haven't had time to look at it yet. I'm a confounded quick study, that's one comfort." Consoling himself with this reflection, Mr. Lenville drew from his coat pocket a greasy and crumpled manuscript, and, having made another pass at his friend, proceeded to walk to and fro, conning it to himself and indulging occasionally in such appropriate action as his imagination and the text suggested. A pretty general muster of the company had by this time taken place, for besides Mr. Lenville and his friend Tommy, there were present a slim young gentleman with weak eyes, who played the low-spirited lovers, and sang tenor songs, and who had come arm in arm with the comic countryman, a man with a turned-up nose, large mouth, broad face, and staring eyes. Making himself very amiable to the infant phenomenon, was an inebriated elderly gentleman in the last depths of shabbiness, who played the calm and virtuous old man, and paying especial court to Mrs. Crummles, was another elderly gentleman, a shade more respectable, who played the irascible old man, those funny fellows who have nephews in the army, and perpetually run about with thick sticks, to compel them to marry heiresses. Besides these, there was a roving-looking person in a rough greatcoat, who strode up and down in front of the lamps, flourishing a dress cane, and rattling away, in an undertone, with great vivacity for the amusement of an ideal audience. He was not quite so young as he had been, and his figure was rather running to seed, but there was an air of exaggerated gentility about him, which bespoke the hero of swaggering comedy. There was, also, a little group of three or four young men with lantern jaws and thick eyebrows, who were conversing in one corner, but they seemed to be of secondary importance, and laughed and talked together without attracting any attention. The ladies were gathered in a little knot by themselves round the rickety table before mentioned. There was Miss Snevellicci, who could do anything, from a medley dance to Lady Macbeth, and also always played some part in blue silk knee smalls at her benefit, glancing, from the depths of her coal scuttle straw bonnet, at Nicholas, and affecting to be absorbed in the recital of a diverting story to her friend Miss Ledrook, who had brought her work, and was making up a ruff in the most natural manner possible. There was Miss Bolvani, who seldom aspired to speaking parts, and usually went on as a page in white silk hose, to stand with one leg bent, and contemplate the audience, or to go in and out after Mr. Crummles in stately tragedy, twisting up the ringlets of the beautiful Miss Bravassa, who had once had her likeness taken in character by an engraver's apprentice, whereof impressions were hung up for sale in the pastry cook's window, and the greengrocer's, and at the circulating library, and the box office, whenever the announced bills came out for her annual night. There was Mrs. Lenville, in a very limp bonnet and veil, decidedly in that way in which she would wish to be if she truly loved Mr. Lenville,
There was Miss Kazinji, with an imitation ermine boa tied in a loose knot round her neck, flogging Mr. Crummles, Jr., with both ends, in fun. Lastly, there was Mrs. Grudden in a brown cloth pelisse and a beaver bonnet, who assisted Mrs. Crummles in her domestic affairs, and took money at the doors, and dressed the ladies, and swept the house, and held the prompt book, when everybody else was on for the last scene, and acted any kind of part on any emergency without ever learning it, and was put down in the bills under my name or names whatever, that occurred to Mr. Crummles as looking well in print. Mr. Fowler, having obligingly confided these particulars to Nicholas, left him to mingle with his fellows. The work of personal introduction was completed by Mr. Vincent Crummles, who publicly heralded the new actor as a prodigy of genius and learning. "I beg your pardon," said Miss Snevellicci, sidling towards Nicholas, "but did you ever play at Canterbury?"
I never did," replied Nicholas.
"I recollect meeting a gentleman at Canterbury," said Miss Snevellicci, "only for a few moments, for I was leaving the company as he joined it, so like you, that I felt almost certain it was the same."
"I see you now for the first time," rejoined Nicholas with all due gallantry.
"I am sure I never saw you before. I couldn't have forgotten it."
"I'm sure it's very flattering of you to say so," retorted Miss Snevellicci with a graceful bend. "Now I look at you again, I see that the gentleman at Canterbury hadn't the same eyes as you. You'll think me very foolish for taking notice of such things, won't you?"
"Not at all," said Nicholas. "How can I feel otherwise than flattered by your notice in any way?"
"You men are such vain creatures,"
cried Miss Snevellicci. Whereupon, she became charmingly confused, and, pulling out her pocket handkerchief from a faded pink silk reticule with a gilt clasp, called to Miss Ledrook, "Led, my dear," said Miss Snevellicci.
"Well, what is the matter?"
said Miss Ledrook.
"It's not the same."
"Not the same what?"
"Canterbury, you know what I mean. Come here. I want to speak to you."
But Miss Ledrook wouldn't come to Miss Snevellicci, so Miss Snevellicci was obliged to go to Miss Ledrook, which she did, in a skipping manner that was quite fascinating. And Miss Ledrook evidently joked Miss Snevellicci about being struck with Nicholas. For, after some playful whispering, Miss Snevellicci hit Miss Ledrook very hard on the backs of her hands, and retired up, in a state of pleasing confusion.
"Ladies and gentlemen," said Mr. Vincent Crummles, who had been writing on a piece of paper, "we'll call the mortal struggle tomorrow at 10. Everybody for the procession. Intrigue, and ways and means, you're all up in, so we shall only want one rehearsal. Everybody at 10, if you please."
"Everybody at 10, repeated Mrs. Crudden, looking about her.
"On Monday morning we shall read a new piece," said Mr. Crummles. "The name's not known yet, but everybody will have a good part. Mr. Johnson will take care of that."
"Hello.
Said Nicholas, starting.
"On Monday morning," repeated Mr. Crummles, raising his voice, to drown the unfortunate Mr. Johnson's remonstrance.
"That'll do, ladies and gentlemen."
The ladies and gentlemen required no second notice to quit, and, in a few minutes, the theater was deserted, save by the Crummles family, Nicholas, and Smike.
"Upon my word," said Nicholas, taking the manager aside, "I don't think I can be ready by Monday."
replied Mr. Crummles.
"But really I can't," returned Nicholas. "My invention is not accustomed to these demands, or possibly I might produce invention.
What the devil's that got to do with it?"
cried the manager hastily.
"Everything, my dear sir. Apostrophe, nothing, my dear sir, apostrophe retorted the manager, with evident impatience. Do you understand French? Apostrophe, perfectly well. Apostrophe, very good, apostrophe said the manager, opening the table drawer, and giving a roll of paper from it to Nicholas. There. Just turn that into English, and put your name on the title page. Damn me, apostrophe said Mr. Crummles, angrily, if I haven't often said, that I wouldn't have a man or woman in my company that wasn't master of the language, so that they might learn it from the original, and play it in English, and save all this trouble and expense. Apostrophe, Nicholas smiled, and pocketed the play. What are you going to do about your lodgings? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Crummles. Nicholas could not help thinking that, for the first week, it would be an uncommon convenience to have a turn-up bedstead in the pit, but he merely remarked that he had not turned his thoughts that way. Come home with me then, apostrophe said Mr. Crummles, and my boy shall go with you after dinner and show you the most likely place. Apostrophe, the offer was not to be refused. Nicholas and Mr. Crummles gave Mrs. Crummles an arm each, and walked up the street in stately array. Smike, the boys, and the phenomenon, went home by a shorter cut, and Mrs. Crutton remained behind to take some cold Irish stew, and a pint of porter in the box office. Mrs. Crummles trod the pavement, as if she were going to immediate execution with an animating consciousness of innocence, and that heroic fortitude which virtue alone inspires. Mr. Crummles, on the other hand, assumed the look and gait of a hardened despot, but they both attracted some notice from many of the passers-by, and when they heard a whisper of Mr. and Mrs. Crummles, apostrophe apostrophe or saw a little boy run back to stare them in the face, the severe expression of their countenances relaxed, for they felt it was popularity. Mr. Crummles lived in Street Thomas's Street, at the house of one Bulf, a pilot, who sported a boat green door, with window frames of the same color, and at the little finger of a drowned man on his parlor mantel shelf, with other maritime and natural curiosities. He displayed also a brass knocker, a brass plate, and a brass bell handle, all very bright and shining, and had a mast, with a vane on the top of it, in his backyard. You are welcome, apostrophe said Mrs. Crummles, turning round to Nicholas, when they reached the bow-windowed front room on the first floor. Nicholas bowed his acknowledgments, and was unfeignedly glad to see the cloth laid. We have but a shoulder of mutton with onion sauce, apostrophe said Mrs. Crummles, in the same charnel house voice, but such as our dinner is, we beg you to partake of it. Apostrophe, you are very good, apostrophe replied Nicholas, I shall do it ample justice. Apostrophe, Vincent, apostrophe said Mrs. Crummles, what is the hour? Apostrophe, 5 minutes past dinner time, apostrophe said Mr. Crummles. Mrs. Crummles rang the bell. Let the mutton and onion sauce appear. Apostrophe, the slave who attended upon Mr. Bulf's lodgers, disappeared, and after a short interval reappeared with the festive banquet. Nicholas and the infant phenomenon opposed each other at the Pembroke table, and Smike and the Master Crumleses dined on the sofa bedstead. Are they very theatrical people here? Apostrophe, apostrophe asked Nicholas. No, apostrophe replied Mr. Crummles, shaking his head, far from it, far from it. Apostrophe, I pity them, apostrophe observed Mrs. Crummles. So do I, apostrophe said Nicholas. If they have no relish for theatrical entertainments, properly conducted. Apostrophe, then they have none, sir, apostrophe rejoined Mr. Crummles. To the infant's benefit, last year, on which occasion she repeated three of her most popular characters, and also appeared in The Fairy Porcupine, as originally performed by her, there was a house of no more than £4.12. Apostrophe, is it possible? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Nicholas. And £2 of that was trust, pa, apostrophe said the phenomenon. And £2 of that was trust, apostrophe repeated Mr. Crummles. Mrs. Crummles herself has played to mere handfuls. Apostrophe, but they are always a taken audience. Vincent, apostrophe, said the manager's wife. Most audiences are, when they have good acting, real good acting, the regular thing, apostrophe, replied Mr. Crummles, forcibly. Do you give lessons, ma'am? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Nicholas. I do, apostrophe, said Mrs. Crummles. There is no teaching here, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe, there has been, apostrophe, said Mrs. Crummles. I have received pupils here. I imparted tuition to the daughter of a dealer in ship's provision, but it afterwards appeared that she was insane when she first came to me. It was very extraordinary that she should come under such circumstances. Apostrophe, not feeling quite so sure of that, Nicholas thought it best to hold his peace. Let me see, apostrophe, said the manager cogitating after dinner. Would you like some nice little part with the infant? Apostrophe, apostrophe, you are very good, apostrophe, replied Nicholas hastily, but I think perhaps it would be better if I had somebody of my own size at first, in case I should turn out awkward. I should feel more at home, perhaps. Apostrophe, true, apostrophe, said the manager. Perhaps you would. And you could play up to the infant, in time, you know. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.